Chapter 29. On Monday afternoon, Thorn visited Robin and said, "Something, perhaps."
"About Petra?"
Robin asked.
"At last."
"About Vartzi. From Grice and Hucklethwaite. A customer at a coffee house in Fernley Street, the Arabian, reports that a gentleman who's taken rooms there might be our quarry. He claims to be a Spanish scholar by name of Garza, but the respondent has spoken to him and doesn't think his accent is Spanish."
"And Garza is close to Vartzi."
"Which may be misleading," Thorn warned. "But Garza wears a bob wig, which was knocked askew one day when he was jostled. The hair beneath was thin and greying. Hardly, I must point out, unlikely."
"Except that most men wearing that sort of wig are bald or shave their heads."
"It has to be investigated."
"There's more," Thorn said. "The coffee house also serves as a receiving point for post, but the letters are merely left out on a side table. The man thinks, only thinks, he might have seen Garza pick up a letter there. But he asked, and the owner of the place said he'd seen none for that name."
"It may be nothing, but it must be checked," Robin said, excitement building. "How do we arrange this?"
"Report him to the authorities, as discussed earlier."
"I know the man. I can make sure."
"He's dangerous."
"I'll be careful." Robin sat down to write a hasty note.
"I don't know how you can scribble so neatly."
"My only talent."
"Who's the blessed recipient?"
"Christian. Once I confirm his identity, we'll give the military the honour of arresting him on suspicion of espionage. That'll work around the normal forms for a while."
"Only a temporary solution."
"Then I try to nail him for that attack outside Folkestone and see him hang."
Men were sent to the Arabian to find out if Signor Garza was there. If so, they were to watch and follow him if he left. By the time a message came back to say he was in his room, Christian had arrived.
"I'll arrest him," he said, "but you'd better hope he doesn't have some sort of diplomatic credentials, and I'd rather you stayed out of it."
"I can recognize him," Robin repeated. "Don't worry, I'll be armed."
"You're hoping for an excuse to shoot him," Christian said.
Robin's jaw tightened.
"Unreasonable?"
"No, but have you ever shot anyone?"
Robin had to admit he hadn't.
"It isn't as easy as you might think, even if the opponent is thoroughly evil. When he's old enough to be your father... Remember, he's a bad man, Robin."
Robin remembered Petra and Coquette and the attack on his men.
"Oh, I won't forget that."
Less than an hour later, Robin limped into the coffee house, his heart beating faster. Thorn would follow shortly, and Christian was already placing his men at front and back. The clientele seemed a normal collection, from clerks to gentlemen, young to ancient, merry to quiet. Many were reading the newspapers provided, but some were simply talking. He wondered which was the informant. A servant came to take his order, but Robin said, "Signor Garza? Which room?" The man hesitated.
"Shall I get him for you, sir?"
"I prefer to go up." Robin saw some coffee drinkers look behind him and turned, but it was only Thorn entering and strolling over to look at the letters on the table. He was attempting to look ordinary, but, as usual, it didn't work. Robin turned back and found the waiter gone. He saw him disappearing upstairs and followed, cursing his leg. It made stairs particularly difficult. As he neared the top, the waiter appeared, hurrying back down. The man stopped, eyes going wide.
"Which room?"
Robin asked.
"Don't know."
Robin pulled out his pistol.
"Go Don't be foolish. The man swallowed. First on the right, but...
But he's going out the back way,
Robin completed, hearing noises as he pushed past the man. He yelled back to Thorn, It's him! And turned right into a corridor to see a man's back, a man in a dark suit and a bob wig.
Halt! He said, unable to resist adding, Your money or your life, Signor Varzi!
The man turned, pistol already aimed, and fired. Robin fell to his knees by instinct, cursing searing pain in his leg, deafened by the gun roar, feeling the balls slam into wood by his head. He shot the man. Varzi clutched his chest, huddling in as if in self-protection, looking more surprised than anything, but then his eyes filled with pure malevolence before glazing over as he crumpled. Robin stayed where he was, his ears ringing, his mind numb until pain shot through his leg again and he clutched it. A mass of soldiers burst from the back stairs, hiding Varzi. Then Thorn knelt at Robin's side. Did he hit you? Leg again? Robin could hardly hear him, but his sense of smell was working. The stink of Varz's blood and excretion was joining acrid powder in the narrow space. Is he dead? He asked, not even hearing himself clearly. Definitely. Are you hurt, Robin? Thorn shouted. Not shot. My leg... He moved his leg slowly with his hands, so he could sit at the top of the stairs and stretch it out. But that meant he faced the crowd trying to come up to see what was happening. Help me up, he said to Thorn, and get me out of here. Thorn did so, but the stairs were blocked by now. Back way, he said, turning and taking Robin's limping weight. Why didn't I expect him to shoot without warning? Because he was old and looked harmless. Thorn said, Christian warned you. Take the lesson to heart. Robin's ears were clearing, but that made the cacophony of voices worse. They were nearing the corpse.
Have you witnessed violent death before?
Not unless you count a hanging, Thorn said. Robin caught a glimpse of the body as they squeezed past. Varz's limbs splayed and his wig had fallen off, revealing straggly, greying hair. Death had no dignity.
There was Varz's man outside Folkestone, he said, but I didn't actually do the deed. Perhaps one becomes accustomed.
A hand gripped his shoulder. Christian. Christian, who'd fought in battles and presumably become used to killing. You did what you had to, and a damn good shot, too. Right to the heart. Blind instinct. Then you have good instincts. The man was a cold-hearted villain, a cur.
And a cur one merely shoots, Robin said wryly.
Christian slapped him on the back hard.
Remember how he threatened your men and would have abducted your damsel in distress.
Old enough to be my father, though.
Then old enough to know better. Thorn, get him out of here and get him a brandy. I'll clean up the mess and keep both your names out of it if I can.
Robin made his way down the back stairs and out into fresh air, where he began to feel better, though he didn't think he'd ever forget the sight of the man dying only yards in front of him. Dying at his hand. Two soldiers were standing guard by the door. Thorn left Robin with them and went to summon the sedan. When it came, Robin managed to get into it, a hand to his bloody thigh.
Surprised I can tear the stitches by now, but I think that's what I've done.
Thorn swore and ordered the men to make haste. Robin pulled down the blinds and bobbed by the crowd gathering outside the Arabian, hearing rumours spin.
Foreign spy. Assassin. Tried to kill a duke. Soldiers took him down.
He rested his head back and closed his eyes. He sometimes wondered whether there was any solid truth at all in the world. Robin's mother, rigid with anger and distress, insisted on inspecting the wound herself. Two stitches had given way, leaving dried blood and swollen flesh.
"How could you go off to do such a thing? You are an earl. You must behave like one."
"By staying at home while others do my work."
"Such work, yes."
"Thorn went too," he pointed out.
"Fah, he is no better, and he has no brothers, so he is worse. It is all to do with that woman, is it not?"
"I believe I was raised to protect the weak."
"Fah, you will stay in bed now until you are completely healed."
He owed her that, so he said, "Yes, Mama."
"And soon you must come home, where I can prevent such follies."
Robin knew he did need to go to Eastern Court soon to take full control of his earldom, but not yet. He wasn't ready for that struggle, and he needed to find Petra, to tell her that her enemy was dead, and other things. "In due course," he said, seeking an excuse, "I must let my leg heal, and then I have a mind to attend Ashet's Venetian masquerade." Being an invalid did not come naturally, but Robin's friends flowed through the house, ready to gamble, play music, or just share what gossip there was at this time of year. No one brought any news of Petra Daverio, or of a mysterious Italian beauty by any other name. Robin could be sure that Varzi was no longer a threat to her, but he had to find her. He had to be sure she was well and happy. He had to try to persuade her to give him another chance. Given his behaviour, his untruths, he couldn't blame her for not trusting him. He would never force his attentions on her, but he couldn't endure not knowing where she was. Even from his bed he could organise searches, starting again from the Gaynor farm and from Micklebury, but they achieved nothing. He set a watch on Teresa Cornalis's house, but nothing indicated that Petra was there. Thorn had returned to his estate and had men asking questions all over Kent, but Petra Daverio had disappeared as if she had never existed. All Robin had as evidence were a few precious remnants, her cross, her rosary, and the one blotched letter. His mother attempted to choose a new secretary for him, and when he refused to permit it, she left for Eastern Court. He was sorry to be at odds with her, but he had to establish his authority, even if only bit by bit. In some ways, he couldn't quite define he owed that to Petra. Change had been forced upon her, but she'd faced it with strength, determination, and courage. He could try to do as well. Once his mother had gone, he set about interviewing secretaries, but his mind was on Petra at all times. When Christian dropped by to keep him company, Robin said, "I'll never rest easy until I'm sure Petra is safe and well." "If it's still eating at you, why not advertise again? It worked last time." "I won't set hounds after her." "You don't have to. Make it a message to her, asking her to let you know she's safe." Robin was intrigued, but he said, "What are the chances she'd read it? Do you read those things?" "Plenty of people commented on the Varzi one. You just have to make it unusual so that people would chatter about it, and put in something that would catch her attention." "It's an amusement, at least." With Christian's help and a shared bottle of claret, he came up with, "Who did kill Cock Robin? No, not the sparrow with its bow and arrow, but a bird that has flown with its sling and stone. News of this bird will be generously received by," Robin smiled, "Mr. Goodfellow, at the Arabian Coffee House, Fernley Street, London." That's a little risky, Christian said. Why? I want Petra to know I had a hand in Vartz's death, and I need an address where she can send a message. Above all, he said, draining his glass, I need to receive that message.
Have you seen this? Portia asked, entering the tapestry room on Thursday, a newspaper in hand.
Petra was sitting with Rosa, embroidering a smock for Rosa's daughter Jenny. She only glanced up. Portia had become obsessed with advertisements and notices, seeking hidden meanings in the simplest requests for employment or for assistance finding a lost dog. But when Portia read the strange announcement out loud, she had to struggle not to leap up and grab it. Who did kill Cock Robin? No, not the sparrow with its bow and arrow, but a bird that has flown with its sling and stone. News of this bird will be generously received by Mr. Goodfellow at the Arabian Coffee House, Fernley Street, London. It was a plea, and more. It told her Robin had been connected to Vartz's death. Of course he was. She'd known that despite her letter, he wouldn't have stopped trying to keep her safe, and guilt at her silence had been eating at her. She had no means to send a letter secretly, however. She went nowhere because her presence was being kept secret until the masquerade, and she was hardly ever alone.
Isn't it mysterious? Portia said. Do you remember, Petra? Your senior Vartzi was killed at the Arabian Coffee House.
You think there's a connection? Petra asked, because she had to say something.
It's hard to see what, Rosa said. Your Vartzi is dead and gone, and he had nothing to do with birds. Did he?
No, Petra said. I'm sure it's a private joke of some sort, and the coffee house is simply a coincidence. Vartz's death had been much discussed here, of course, and with great satisfaction. Lord Bright seemed to suspect that it had been his brother's work, though Hrothgar had denied it. Petra believed her father. If anything, he seemed annoyed at being forestalled. Everyone seemed to accept the idea that Vartzi had been dabbling in espionage for Austria, as well as seeking her, and that that had been his ruin. Petra had found no connection to Robin in any of the accounts. He'd been killed by soldiers under the command of a Major Grandiston. A little oblique questioning had revealed that Grandiston was an experienced officer in the Horse Guards, who had been on duty at court until recently, so he certainly hadn't been travelling northern France as Robin Bonchurch. One account had speculated that Vartzi had been planning to assassinate a duke, perhaps one of the king's brothers. Robin certainly wasn't one of them. She'd eventually accepted coincidence, but now it appeared otherwise.
Why Goodfellow? Portia muttered, still trying to decipher it. "He's in Shakespeare, isn't he?" Rosa asked, amiably playing the game. "Another name for Puck?"
"Robin Goodfellow," Portia declared. "Yes, of course, that fits with the reference to Cock Robin. That poem's all about birds, but I wonder what it means."
"Robin," Petra thought. "Proof positive."
"It's not all birds," Rosa pointed out. "The bull tolls the bell, and the fly sees him die. I think I read once that it's some sort of allegory about Walpole."
"Politics," said Portia.
"Ugh!" As the other two teased apart the advertisement and the Cock Robin poem, Petra tried to think of a way to respond to Robin's plea. She must, or she'd never be at peace. Suddenly she thought of a possibility. That evening, when no one could make any connection, she asked her father how she might send a note of thanks to Mistress Waddle. "She can't read, but her nephew at the Three Cocks can. She'd be delighted to receive a letter, I think," Doubtless, he said with a smile. Simply write it and put it in the postbag in the hall. It will be paid at this end, so she won't be asked for money. He seemed unsuspicious, but Petra was more and more aware that Lord Hrothgar's reputation for sagacity and omniscience was warranted. He was closely involved in matters of state, and maintained a large administration simply to keep him informed on national and international affairs. Such people could be turned to acquiring other information. Even Lord Hrothgar's brothers found him difficult to comprehend at times. Petra didn't deceive herself that she could do so. She didn't think he would break a seal, however, so she took the risk. She had a writing desk now, stocked with everything she might need, including a new seal with a PM on it. She wrote her letter, but added a postscript, asking Mistress Waddle to get Mr. Hythe to send on the enclosed letter. Then she cut a sheet of paper in half and used that for a simple letter to Robin. "I am well," she wrote, "but I could still be a danger to you, even with Vartzi dead. I thank you for that, for I'm sure now you played a part. Please fly free, Cock Robin, and avoid all sparrows, arrows, and stones. Petra." She folded it and sealed it in the way she'd sealed the last letter she'd sent him, by pressing down with the handle of her seal and finishing it with her finger. This time she could kiss it, and for some reason that impelled her to address it to Stoating, not London. She folded it in the other and impressed that seal properly. There. It was a risk, but she hoped her father would only think she'd written her benefactor a long letter. She held the letter, however, sighing. Would she ever see Robin again? She'd hoped that her feelings would fade, but if anything, they sank deeper roots with every day, fed by hope. She was to enter society, after all, and whatever his true name or title, he was part of that world. Had he not been on his way back from Versailles? Perhaps, just perhaps, her dream in the Goulard farmyard could come true. Perhaps she might one day meet him at a ball and be properly introduced. Then they could dance and converse, lock eyes and flirt. If he felt about her as she felt about him, if she meant more to him than a responsibility to be cared for, then perhaps, just perhaps, they might do more, all without shame or scandal. Perhaps, sometimes, dreams did come true. "On the third day," said Robin to Fontaine, "I rise from my bed." He had kept his promise to his mother, and today would be the first day since Vartz's death that he'd attempted normal activities. He walked around his room a little. It didn't hurt much at all. "I do believe that allowing the new stitches to knit has allowed the rest to heal too. Damn stiff, though." "Please take care, sir," Fontaine said, hovering. He had returned yesterday and was still fussing. Coquette hovered and fussed too, on Robin's other side, as if she could be some help. "Do you have no idea you're tiny?" Robin asked the dog. Coquette's look could well say no. Robin limped to the window, feeling more or less normal. As he stretched, he looked out at a moderately pleasant day for London. "I shall go down for breakfast," he declared. That, not having distressed him, he ventured farther and took Coquette for a short walk, amused by people's reactions. Nearly everyone he passed stared with a silent, "What is that?" "What will happen when I introduce you to my real dogs at Eastern Court?" he asked her when they returned. "I suppose you'll expect to rule the roost." He sat down with a sigh. This is all very well, little one, but I still have no word of Petra, and until I do, I can't seem to grasp the rest of my life.
He snapped out of that and considered the men he'd interviewed for secretary. He decided to trust his instincts and settled on a young, enthusiastic, and extremely bright Oxford man called Nantwich, who was in town and ready to take up a position. Nantwich was also a curate's son who really needed a good position, and Robin knew that swayed him. He sent for the man and informed him of his good fortune. In the afternoon he ventured to his club in his sedan, where he heard a number of people mention the Cock Robin advertisement, wondering what it might mean, or grumbling about people who wasted ink and paper on nonsense. The company was decidedly dull, so he went on to Angelo's to watch some fencing. The instructor wanted to know the details of his fight outside Folkestone. Robin told the story and ended up demonstrating some of the moves. He stopped when his leg complained, but began to feel he might be human again soon. The next day he opened a letter from Thorne, hoping for news of the search. When he saw the enclosure, his heartbeat faltered. It was addressed exactly as the last one and sent from Micklebury again, but the writing was different. This was fine quality paper and ink, so he was seeing Petra's true hand, a light, steeply sloping style with its flourishing tails. He turned it to see that again the wax bore no seal. Like last time, it had merely been pressed down when cooling with a finger or thumb. He could clearly see the lines and whorls. She was still keeping secrets, for with such fine quality paper and pen, she must have a seal of some sort. He touched there, felt an alarming impulse to kiss there. The pressing finger might not even have been hers, he told himself, but he knew it was, and surrendered. Then he snapped the seal, unfolded the heavy paper, and read the words. I am well, but I could still be a danger to you, even with Vartzi dead. I thank you for that, for I'm sure now you played a part. Please fly free, Cock Robin, and avoid all sparrows, arrows, and stones. Petra. He couldn't imagine why she'd think she was still a danger to him, but clearly she was well, and with people who could afford fine paper and ink. Clearly she truly did want him to stop seeking her. He could go to this Micklebury and try to pick up her trail, but she had made her wishes clear. It hurt like blazes, but he had to respect them, even though he felt that he'd never fly again.